Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that the entries for this year's Sleepwire Pro-Am and Listener Leagues are now available. Coming back for the fifth season, we once again have a great lineup of pros, including Jake Seeley, Matt Harmon, Mitch Renz, Pat Fitzmorris, Marcus Grant, Justin Boone, the Sleeper app, and so much more. We have so many options for you to play with the pros and us this season. A one-time $50 donation to our Patreon page will get you into the Pro-Am. A one-time donation of $30 gets you into a listener league with us, and a one-time $75 donation gets you into both the Pro-Am and a listener league. Visit patreon.com/sleeperwire to make your donation, and then screenshot your confirmation email and send it to sleeperwire@gmail.com, and we'll make sure to get you on the list. Make sure to include your name and your sleeper username in the email. Once again, that's patreon.com/sleeperwire and send it to sleeperwire@gmail.com.
Welcome to the Sleeperwire Show. I'm your host, Jason. I'm here with Primetime Lucas and our guest, SFB8 champ himself, Stompy. Guys, how you doing tonight?
Doing well. I'm really excited to have last year's champion on here to talk a little bit of Scott Fishbowl.
Yeah, what's going on, gentlemen? I really appreciate the invite and excited to talk about my repeat.
I was going to say, it's always nice to have last year's champ on to talk with this year's champ.
Hey, before we get started, Jason, are you actually recording?
I am. But George, what are you doing on here?
I decided to join.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, all right.
You invited me.
All right. So adding to the show.
You said you wanted the SFB9 champ on this year, so here I am.
All right. Adding one more guest to the show. It's Sleeperwire. Great showtime. It's George. Hey, George.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen?
That was such an anti-climactic intro. It's George.
it's just George.
No, so if you don't know, George and I do. We have a separate show. It's a non-fantasy football based show. Just kind of joking around, and I like to introduce George in the least exciting way possible every chance I get.
I love it.
He's trying to hold me down, but I don't let the man hold me down.
All right. Well, so we're going to talk SFB information about our teams. We're going to have a discussion about like how we think our drafts went this year, surprises and that. But first, we're going to get into the news of the week. A lot of injury news this week. AJ Green is trending the wrong way. He underwent minor ankle surgery. When news first came out this morning, they were talking about the first game still being possible. Now they're talking about one or two games. Guys, what round are we looking at for AJ Green now that he's going to miss a couple games?
In regular redraft, I think sixth round is going to be the earliest that I'd be considering him. If he fell to the seventh or eighth, I would feel pretty obligated just based off talent. I am pretty nervous that this is actually going to extend and we're not going to see real AJ Green until week 4, 5, 6, and this could linger. He's returning from an injury, and this just is not a great way to start.
So I actually had ankle and foot surgery last season. Mine was last season. Like I'm a football player. No, I last year July or something, and I wasn't really right until December, because I had to go through and mind you, obviously I don't have access to all of the stuff that they do in terms of health and medical and all that stuff, but it takes a while to get that strength back in your foot and your ankle and to trust it again. And this is an injury where I just don't know if I would trust that this year.
I mean, I've seen Stompy in a singlet and I can attest he's not the athlete that AJ Green is. You can call that a hot take if you'd like, but I'm in agreement with him though. I'm staying away from AJ Green in redraft if at all possible. the likelihood that he goes out and re-injures that foot is pretty high. So I'm staying away. He won't be on any of my redraft teams.
Yeah, I'll agree with all of that. I know what Lucas is saying. The talent's pretty good. So if you see him in the seventh and eighth round, but man, it's tough because you're still looking for starting players at that point, and he's gonna be out two games at the minimum, and then you know who knows where it goes from there. And this isn't the foot he's coming back from last year, so who knows how well that's actually healed. Now he's got two bad wheels, so I'm kind of avoiding the situation as well. So Adam Schefter reports that Derrick Henry has a strained calf muscle and could sideline him for a couple of weeks during the preseason. It's not considered serious, but the team is being overly cautious. Does this do anything for you, Stompy? Are you staying away from Derrick Henry, or are you a guy who already stays away from Derrick Henry?
I mean, I was a guy that was going to stay away from Derrick Henry. He's been kind of a flash in the pan each of the last two seasons. I have to wonder, and I don't know how many of you guys watch basketball, I have to wonder if the issues with Kevin Durant and the torn Achilles are making everybody in the sports world a little bit wary. We see Andrew Luck with the same injury, and they're being overly cautious with it as well. And speaking of, that's the next note on here. But the other thing is, it's a soft tissue injury, and soft tissue injuries tend to linger if not taken care of. And I'm glad that they're doing the right thing and putting them in a walking boot and making sure it's taken care of. But it makes me extremely wary, and I would be willing to drop him. I mean, I would take him a couple rounds later. I think he's going in like the third, maybe fourth right now. Maybe in the fifth, sixth, I would take him. But I just, soft tissue injuries, especially in preseason, are extremely scary for me.
So we've seen Derrick Henry struggle most of last year. He caught fire at the end of the year. I honestly believe he'll be okay. I think what the Titans plan on doing is running him into the ground this year and just saying goodbye at the end of the year. I think they're going to do the same thing to him that the Cowboys did to DeMarco Murray a few years back. Give him some ungodly amount of carries, ride him until they can't ride him anymore. I'm still drafting him. I have no problem taking him. If I can get him a round or two later now, because people are concerned about, you know, him being in a walking boot, I'll take the discount, but I'm not shying away from drafting him. I think they're going to give him at least 325 carries this year, and I think he's going to be a solid play every week as long as he's able to run the ball.
See, I just feel like this is the same old song and dance. Last year, he was being drafted at nearly this exact same position, and he ended up on almost every waiver wire in all of my leagues. People could not give Derrick Henry away. And for the games that he performed, most of the people that ended up with him on their teams, you didn't use him for every game that he performed. You maybe used him for...
I did.
You got him for every single one, even including the first one that
every
he popped.
Single one.
See? And now, was that based off of... you'd been playing him the entire year, or you had to do it based off of necessity because of other injuries you were having to your players?
Necessity, but I did get to use him for every game that he popped off at the end of the year, and he did get me to the finals.
See, so I mean, if you were able to do that, that's great, but most people, you know, weren't using him because they probably weren't in that exact same situation that you were, that you had to use him out of necessity. And most people that had him and drafted him throughout the year, you were scrounging. You know, maybe you were lucky and you picked up Philip Lindsay early, and so that you had him to play all year. But a lot of people that had Derrick Henry, you weren't happy that you had him. So to be taking him that early again, to me, there's a lot of running backs behind him that I would just rather have, or other players that I would rather just switch up the position.
I agree, but I also think that the four of us are probably smarter with regards to I'm not going to talk for Jason. The three of us are a lot smarter than the average fantasy player. They're going to look at what he did last year, and they're going to buy right into it that he'll be able to do that again. So I think, you know, a lot of people did play him every week, and I think a lot of people got to – deep into the playoffs off of his end of the year performances.
All right, so let's play a little quick game. And I just pulled up Fantasy Football Calculator where Derrick Henry's ADP is 24. So we'll play a quick game. You guys can all answer. Derrick Henry is now going behind Damian Williams. So who are you going to take, Damian Williams, Derrick Henry?
What format?
Let's say half point PPR.
I'm still taking Damian Williams. I'm not so worried about the hamstring issue yet. It's beforehand. So Damian for me.
Yeah, if it's a level playing field, no injuries, nothing like that, I'd take Damian Williams.
Well, and everything being equal, I mean, they're both soft tissue injuries, so it's like they're starting on the same footing for me. So I'm taking Damian Williams because I think he has the RB1 upside.
Thank you, Stompy. Right. I love it.
All right, how about, let's see, going around him, Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs.
I'm taking Henry.
Is going after.
That's tough for me. I'm not sold on Jacobs yet.
I'm taking Henry all day.
I know what Henry is. I think I'm going to take the possibility of Jacobs.
This is tough. I mean, with the cutting of Chris Warren, I don't really think it means that all that much. But I mean, it just kind of solidifies that Jacobs is the three down back there. And he's a good pass catcher. And I think I have to take Jacobs. I'm not happy about it.
Yep.
All right. And then one last one, and we'll get off Derrick Henry. Kerryon Johnson.
Oh, it's Kerryon
all day.
Yeah.
With the news of them cutting Riddick, it's outdated ADP. He's skyrocketing right now.
They are within two picks of each other right now. So
that ADP for Riddick is going to jump significantly.
See, had Kerryon not got hurt last year, he was on a really good pace. Had he not got hurt, he would be going much earlier.
Well,
I think out in Oakland, I still think Jalen Richard is going to play a factor in that backfield as far as catching goes.
All right, so. Stompy talked about it for a second there, so let's get into Andrew Luck. He missed his second practice in 4 days due to his calf injury. It's the same injury that sidelined him earlier in the spring. How much do you guys buy this as just being cautious and, you know, given the track record of them kind of hiding injuries with Andrew Luck and saying things are a lot less they say things are a lot less bad than they actually ended up being? Like, do you worry about Andrew Luck this season?
I'm not worried, and they're so early right now that your quarterback, he's not really needing to get a ton of reps in right now. I know it helps for the other players to have him in there, but with us being where we are, if he's in any pain at all, why rush it? Why risk actually making it something worse than what it is?
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember when Andrew Luck couldn't throw a regular NFL-sized football. So, yeah, this doesn't bother me at all.
The nice thing about Andrew Luck is that now he doesn't really have to scramble all that much because of that offensive line. So, I'm guessing he doesn't really need that calf anyway. Regardless, I'm not really worried about it entering the season.
Yeah, as long as it's not affecting the 3 to 5 step drops, I think he'll be okay.
All right, look. So Stompy made news today, Andrew Luck to be the first player to play without a calf.
Yeah, there you go. Just cut off his lower leg and put a blade on it. It's fine.
Is that a performance enhancement?
I don't know. Because didn't that murderer from South Africa run in the Olympics with one?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And now I will just say that Rodgers only played with one leg all of last year. So
what you're saying is toughen up, Luck. Rodgers can do it. You can do it.
All I'm saying is apparently quarterbacks only need one leg.
All right. So Tyreek Hill bruises quad on hard hit by Bashaud Breeland. He should be fine, but has notable limp. So first of all, how much do you think the coach yelled at Bashaud Breeland?
The guy got cut.
No, who? So what exactly happened there? Like, was it just an accident, or was the guy just going?
I think he was squaring. I think I read it earlier. He was squaring up to do a tackle and
hit him hard.
Hill got injured. Yeah, Hill got injured on the play. I chalk it up to practice. No big deal.
Yeah, it's dumb, but it's one of those things where it's like, things are going to happen regardless of whether it's non-contact or whatever. So I'm not, I don't blame
the guy, the guy's trying to make an impression on the coach and on the team. I mean, it happens. Yeah. It's football.
And then a scare out of Buccaneers camp. Mike Evans was carted off the field today, reportedly a cramp. Bruce Arians came out and said it was cramps. Now, they're practicing indoor. I don't know how you cramp inside, but I saw George on the field the other day. It looks like his whole body cramped as he went out for a pass. So
I didn't get carted off, though. So what you're saying is I'm tougher than Mike Williams. Thank you.
Mike Evans, excuse me.
The funny thing about this time of year right now is that there's no other real – I mean, I love baseball, and I can watch baseball all the time, but there's not a lot distracting fantasy football players from watching and interpreting everything in training camp. So anytime like a player is carted off the field or whatever, like everybody holds their collective breath for, well, what happened now? And it's just – ultimately, and usually it just ends up with a minor thing, but it's just so funny to see the reactions.
I personally try not to overreact to injury news in July, unless it's something major like AJ Green. When they require surgery, okay, you've got my attention. But if you're telling me you got cramp or a twisted ankle or even a hamstring in July, I'm not going to, you know, fade you too much right now.
Right.
Just try not to overreact to the minorest of news.
It's put, you know, that it's cause for concern enough to put hamstrings and things like that on your radar. But in terms of really dropping people down your draft boards where you've had these kind of set and slowly moving with the news that we've been getting, dropping people a round or two because of little soft tissue things here before we really know what it is overreaction at its finest, and that's just what we get at this time of the year.
Yeah,
it's fun to play with people that overreact, though, because you get, you know, it's how smart players get deals. You know, right? Like it's how you get your value because everybody's overreacting over every little thing in camp. So if you're doing drafts now, it's a good time to pick up guys or trade for guys that have these minor issues.
Certainly.
So we're gonna move out of injury news and into holdout news. We got three players. Melvin Gordon. So Philip Rivers commented this week about Melvin Gordon's holdout. It certainly is a deep position for us, and those guys all love to play and work hard. We love Melvin, but we're going to go with what we've got. It's pretty dang good group. And somehow they took that and considered it a slight. And I know Josh Gordon reacted with, it's wild that he would say something like that. But guys, don't you think this is... We just talked about overreactions. What is Phil Rivers going to say? I guess he could just say no comment, but like, he gave props to Melvin, but said while he's out, we're going to play with the guys that are on the field.
Yeah, that's 100% right. And I'm sure that Melvin took it the wrong way, especially if he just read the headline or had someone retweet him or tag him in it. And it looks like, and you know, people are, there's not a whole lot out there. So people are trying to, it's clickbait, right? People are trying to get a rise. They're trying to create this drama, and you're 100% right. Philip Rivers is just saying, we are going to play with who's here. We love Melvin. We know he's a great talent, but he's not here right now. So we have to move forward as if he isn't here. Then when he is, we welcome back with open arms.
Yeah, he didn't Baker Mayfield him.
That's right. That's right. Or Ben Roethlisberger him.
I will say he is pretty spot on. I don't think they're going to miss a beat. But, yeah. there's a fine line that you have to be political there, and it's just one of those things where it's like I think that's a fantastic answer. We love Melvin. But we have to move, and he's going to do what he needs to do, but we need to move on and practice.
Yeah, and listen, I can't fade back and hand it off to Dirt. So whoever's on the field, I'm going to hand it to him, and he's going to run for us, you know? Right. And again, it's overreaction. Now, Zeke, on the other hand, the GM for their team, Jerry Jones, came out and said, you don't have to have a rushing champion to win a Super Bowl. That's a little more on the nose, don't you think?
Well, it is. And the funny thing is that all 3 years that Jerry has had Super Bowl wins since he's been the owner, he had Emmitt Smith as his running back. And two of those years, in 93 and 94, I believe, were two of the 3 years that Emmitt Smith had was the rushing champion.
All three of them. All three of them he was the rushing champion.
Yeah, I didn't know that he was the rushing champion in 96, but I do know that he was still Emmitt Smith and in his prime.
Yeah, that's the ultimate irony here is just, okay, you say that. And granted, I mean, Jerry and the Cowboys have the upper hand here because of the way contracts are structured.
And Zeke still has 2 years on his contract.
Just not a good look, though. I mean, he's calling his bluff, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, probably shouldn't be doing that to an already volatile person.
Well, does it say to you guys that they're just not going to pay him? They've already got to pay Dak. They've already got to pay Cooper. They traded a lot to get Cooper. So if they don't make Cooper happy, it looks bad that they've got a guy for 2 years after trading a first. So they're going to pay him. Are they just saying, listen, we're not going to pay Zeke? Do you think that's where this is headed?
It means we're not going to overpay you, and you still have 2 years on your contract. There's other guys ahead of you that need to get paid, including our quarterback. So this probably isn't the time for you to be making the stand. Let's talk in a year, and we'll take care of you.
Yeah, they've got to pay Cooper. Otherwise, that was just a terrible, terrible deal. But, I mean, they have other positions that are coming up that are – kind of important to the team that they have to pay. Cooper is one. I believe Tyron Smith is his contract's coming up. I think Zach Martin's contract is coming up. They've got a lot of contracts coming up that, you know, they have to address. They've got 2 years on Zeke's contract. Plus they have the franchise tag for 2 years. So I think what Jerry was saying is, yes, we don't need a rushing champion, but what he should have said was, you know, we've got 2 years. We'll address Zeke at the proper time. Now is just not that time. We have other people and other contracts we need to address first. That's what he should have said.
So there's two things I think coming out of this. One, I think these guys are doing this now, specifically Zeke, because next year is a collective bargaining, right? And who knows what the final deal's going to be. He's trying to get some guaranteed money now before that contract, before those negotiations go in effect, right?
Well, also with these top-line running backs, they only get, like, one good contract, and that's normally their second contract. So their window to get paid is very, very small. So he's between the new collective bargain agreement that's coming up, I mean, they could go on strike for a year. We don't know. So I get where Zeke's coming from, but he's going to have to wait his turn in Dallas. He's not up for 2 years.
Yeah, and I think that's one way that Dallas could have sold this a little bit better is, hey, you know, we've got guys that are up now. Like, why are you trying to jump the line? You know what I mean? Like, you don't think Dak's worth his money? You know, we can't pay all three a huge contract right now. It could have been a way they went, but instead Jerry just said, nah, we don't need him.
Yeah, Jerry's not one to let the players dictate how things are going to go. That's just never been his style. And with Zeke, if I'm the owner, I want you to prove to me that you're going to stay out of trouble, because every single year there's been something ongoing or something pending. And you have 2 years left on your contract. Come in, work your ass off, give us a year of keeping your head down, staying out of trouble, and putting up numbers for this team, and then next year let's talk.
No, that's the way it should go. It's the way it'll probably end up, because I don't see them restructuring his deal this year.
Well, and here's the crazy thing is, like, he's just – I don't know if you guys have read the Josh Hermsmeyer's latest article on why Zeke's not worth it, but his value added is not even close to – top end money. Like, he ranks 16th in short yardage running in the red zone. He ranks 22nd in closing out games, 10th outside of the red zone in short yardage runs. Like, there are a lot of indicators that it's largely volume, and it's largely that offensive line, and he's just not worth that money.
All right, and the last guy who I think we'll all agree is probably worth the money is Michael Thomas. He's about to sign a contract to make him the first 20 million plus a year wide receiver. What do you guys think about 20 million a year, and is Michael Thomas worth it?
Whew, that's a lot of money. I think he's worth it. You look at what he did, his catch percentage, his not last year, the year before, he was in like the 78 percentile. And everyone said, oh, there's no way he could go out and duplicate that. And he went out last year and he was like 84, 85% catch percentage when balls are thrown his way. He is a stud. And the way teams are paying and the way the salary caps keep going up and up and up, pay the man.
Lucas?
I completely agree. You need to pay Michael Thomas. When you have a guy like that, he's in his prime. He is an absolute monster. And he actually kind of tailed off a little bit at the end of the season there. He was closer to the wasn't he like 90, 93% catch rate through the first 10 or 12 weeks? It's just something absolutely insane. And yeah, absolutely. Pay the man.
And he's been effective his entire career is the big thing. I mean, he's got three straight 1,000 yard seasons, 1,100 yard seasons. Dude has almost three straight 92 or 100 reception seasons. He only had 92 in 2016. Like he's just productive, and I don't know who else is going to catch the ball besides Kamara there.
That's right.
What's interesting about this is what this means for other people, other guys who are looking at contracts, Julio. I know AJ Green before the injury was looking into for an extension. Keenan Allen, not this season, but next season will be up. Amari Cooper, we've already talked about. It'll be interesting to see how this affects the wide receiver market now. And Tyler Boyd just got signed for $10 million, which I think is an absolute steal in this market now.
I agree. I agree with that, especially with AJ Green fading out, locking up Tyler Boyd for was it the 3 or 4 year deal? I forget if it was three.
Yeah,
or four,
but like $10 million a year, which in out of context is a lot, but now that you look at it, you're like you're getting. I mean, not nearly that production, but fantastic production at half the price.
Right, and you have Mixon, and you have a few big running backs behind him. Rodney Anderson, if he can get healed up coming out of OU, that guy was an absolute monster. If he would have stayed healthy last year, he would have been probably the number one or number two back taken this year, in my opinion. But they have their skill positions. They need to get rid of Dalton and figure out what they're doing there. But having Boyd and having Mixon going forward, that's a pretty nice little duo.
Yeah, and George touched on it. A little, and we can get out of the news, but George touched on it a little bit. With the way salary caps are going up, it's not necessarily about the yearly number. It's about percentage against the cap. And the way the caps are going up, 20 million this year is what, 15 million was a couple years ago. So, the thing you have to look at is, it's a big number. It's the biggest number we've seen, but percentage against the cap, I bet you it's right in line with some of the other top wide receiver contracts.
That, and if you look at what Michael Thomas has done, not only on the field, but off the field, he's not in the news at all. I mean, he's never in the news for anything negative. There's nothing more you could ask from the guy.
So we are going to jump out of the news and get into our Scott Fishbowl discussion. And who better to start a Scott Fishbowl discussion with than Stompy? Stompy, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you like to make up your roster in Scott Fishbowl?
Well, I mean, obviously, depends on scoring and the like. The last few seasons, it's been basically super flex, tight end premium with some fun things thrown in there. This year, it's 5 bonus points for, I believe, 50 yards. Is that correct?
Every 50 yards every 50 yards receiving and rushing. So everyone, if they hit 100 yards receiving, they get that bonus twice.
Right. So the bonuses start to throw a wrench into things. Tight end premium. I believe it's a premium on not only receptions, but first downs as well. So Scott likes to throw some fun scoring in there. But I mean, I just went off last year when I won it. And I had fantastic running backs. Last year I was able to get Kamara, CMC, Joe Mixon in three of the first four rounds, and then I picked up Philip Lindsay for cheap. Either it had to be the final week before the regular season. I'm a Broncos fan, so I was kind of tapped into all that. So I had four legitimate starting running backs. And then when Joe Mixon went down, I actually had Gio Bernard behind him as well. So I decided to build it that way again. And I wanted to, I just went running back heavy early. I think it was three of my first four picks and four of my first six picks were running backs. So that's how I decided to build there and then take wide receiver late, because I really think that wide receiver is extremely deep right now, and zero wide receiver strategies and redrafts are the way to go this year.
All right. So with that said, why don't we go into our teams and we can talk about, so this year, and we'll start with Stompy. We're always going to start with the champ, and then
we gotta pay homage.
Yeah, we have to pay the homage. So we're going to start with the champ. Who did you end up with running back this year?
So I took Dalvin Cook in the first, at the back end of the first, and I know a lot of people think that's a reach. I actually was going to go with Joe Mixon there, but Jacob Rickrode shared something on Twitter from Warren Sharp's preview magazine about Dalvin Cook and how successful he was last year when he was healthy, and I had to jump, and he legitimately has top five upside. So if there's any league that you're going to take a risk, it's this one. So I went Dalvin Cook in the first, and then my one of my favorite running backs in the league, Nick Chubb, in the second. I think despite the presence of Kareem Hunt in the second half, I still think Nick Chubb is going to be a monster this season, top 10 running back. They're probably going to score more often, so he's going to get a lot more goal line looks. I get there's concern in terms of PPR, but I think Nick Chubb has like 1,500 yard upside in terms of on the ground. So, and I know that's a little bit hyperbolic, but you get what I'm talking about, is he's just got that really high ceiling. And then I went with Devonta Freeman. Really like him this year. I understand that there is injury risk, but he's still got wide receiver or running back one upside, especially with some new rebuilt line, playing indoors 13 out of 16 games next season. And then nobody really behind him to challenge him for touches. And then I went with Chris Carson in the sixth. Again, I think he is the best running back in Seattle. Whether it's a 50-50 split or not, they're still going to run a ton, and there's going to be plenty of touches there. And I think Chris Carson is going to be a phenomenal talent again this year if he stays healthy. From there, I have Ito Smith to back up Devonta Freeman. I also picked up Quadri Olison to just kind of control that backfield. And then I took Darwin Thompson in the 17th, because I think if Damian Williams were to go down, I think Darwin Thompson would take over that role, because I think Carlos Hyde is a jag.
Yeah, I agree. And real quick, what spot were you drafting from? I might have missed that.
The 11th spot.
Okay, yeah, I knew you were at the back end there. Sounds like we have a few similarities with draft strategy going on here. And one of the main things when I was going through the numbers, like we talked about, were the big 5 points per bonus really outweighs some of the tight end premium here. And so people were going tight end early, which I don't think is really going to benefit you, because every single position gets the 5 points per 50 yards. And also quarterbacks get an extra 5 points for hitting the 300 yard passing mark. So it's pretty beneficial to either take a running quarterback, which there's not that many quarterbacks that were going to hit 50 yards a game. They're going to look a lot like Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Mitch Trubisky. Other than that, I don't think that there's really another quarterback out there that's a threat to hit the 50-yard mark every single game. Pat Mahomes is mobile, but I don't even think he hit the 50-yard mark one time last season. If he did, it might have been once.
Well, so Lucas, since you've been up, what position in the fishbowl were you in? And I want to run through your running backs real quick.
Yeah, real quick. I drafted from the 12th spot, And I wasn't real happy with that. I really wanted to be closer to the end, but as it started going, I started to get more in sync. And, you know, being at the back end of the draft is really tough, because if you miss a run in a super flex league or a tight end heavy league, it does make you feel like you either have to try to catch up or just completely punt at certain positions. But at the 12, I was thinking about going running back, but Davante Adams fell to the 12 spot. And in this scoring format, he was either the number one or the number two guy last year. And then I ended up going Joe Mixon as my first pick in the second round. And I do like Dalvin Cook, but it was really between James Conner and Mixon for me. Gurley was there also, but I went with Mixon. And then at the end of the fifth round, I got Chris Carson. He was averaging over 25 points a game in this format last year, and he was like the number three running back in this format through the last 4 or 5 weeks. And exactly what Stompy was talking about, with Mike Davis being gone, he had 112 rushes last year, and I don't see them throwing a whole lot more. So even if Rashad Penny, who is a darling of a lot of people, even if he gets a lot more touches, it's fine. All I need is Carson to get what he was getting last year, and he finishes the number nine running back. So to me, he's a steal at the end of the fifth. And then I turned around and went Phillip Lindsay with the 6-1. And then in the went a few more picks. I got James White, and that was at the 8-12, which I thought was a pretty good steal. And way later in the 12th and 13th, I got Eckler and Adrian Peterson as my fifth and sixth.
I really like that a lot. Yeah. I wish I had gone more. Like, I stopped drafting running backs from like 7 through 13, and I wish I had gotten another two running backs there that I felt more comfortable with.
Yeah, those were two for me, and then I ended up going with two more real late in the draft. I grabbed Dexter Williams for the Packers, and then Elijah McGuire with my 22nd pick. If anything were to happen to Bell, I mean, Elijah McGuire's a, you know, he's getting you 15 points a game. Yeah.
So, George, what position did you draft from? What are your running backs?
So I also drafted at the back end of the draft. I was 110 overall. My first running back off the board came in the second round. Todd Gurley was staring at me, and I basically went into the Scott Fishbowl with the Dilla Gaff attitude. I'm going to take who I perceive to be the best player available, and I wanted guys with high upside. So in the second round at 203, I took Todd Gurley. I didn't take another running back until the fifth round. I took Kenyon Drake from Miami. I figure at the time I thought he was the starting running back. I still feel like he will be. For sure, he's definitely going to be the pass catching back there, so I'm comfortable with that. And my only other starting running back, and I use starter in quotation marks, is Miles Sanders, and I took him a little bit later. But what I did do is I grabbed a bunch of backups late. Like, I took CJ Anderson, the backup, whoever's got Kerryon. If Kerryon should get injured, I think CJ Anderson, not only will he have a role, but I think his role will obviously increase. Rockwell Armstead, I took him because, you know, Fournette's not staying healthy the whole year. Carlos Hyde, even though I agree he's just a guy, but I think if he does get the starting opportunity in that system, I think he will produce. And I also took Dexter Williams from Green Bay late. And those are my running backs. I only got seven of them, and I only view three as starters.
Yeah, so I'm the oddball here. I got to pick from the front of the draft, so I picked at 102. So I was presented with an interesting choice right off the bat. I assumed Saquon Barkley was going to go off at one. In my league, Zeke Elliott went one. So I got presented. I had in my head I was going to go McCaffrey the whole time, and I ended up taking McCaffrey over Saquon. Actually, I think Saquon fell to 4 or 5 in our league. So I took Christian McCaffrey one, and then so the first four rounds I took three running backs. I have McCaffrey, drafted James Conner, came back with Kerryon Johnson. And then I kind of stopped drafting running backs and started focusing on wide receiver a little bit. So I ended up with, I have Adrian Peterson, TJ Yeldon, Chase Edmonds, and Madison in Minnesota, just because we don't know if Cook's going to stay healthy all year, and he looks like a solid backup. So that's how I went. I started running back early, got three guys I really like, and then grabbed some upside guys in the back.
That AP pick is a real nice one. I like it.
It is, and honestly, it was right before the news about Geis's hamstring, which may or may not. Again, it's camp fodder. We don't know if that's going to be a thing or not. But it was right before that, and everybody assumes when I told him I got Adrian Peterson, it was right after. But I was leaning Peterson anyway, just because I think, especially early, he's going to get a lot of yards.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, and I have Peterson also. There's been a lot of hate with Geis, and this may be contrarian, but I'm actually looking for him. If he's falling till the ninth round, I will take Geis every single time, just purely based on the talent and the upside alone, if they end up using him to see what they have, and then he comes on strong in the back end, and he ends up not being injured and just being completely fully productive for that team.
I've been saying all offseason they're going to ease Geis in. I think he's vastly more talented than Adrian Peterson at this point in Peterson's career. I think they will use Peterson to start the season, and they will sprinkle Geis in here and there, you know, just let him spell for a game or two, a series or two throughout the early part of the season. But as the season goes on, we'll see a transition to more Geis, and then Peterson coming in to spell Geis for a series or two. I think by the end of the year, Geis will be the clear-cut number one in that backfield.
I think that hamstring injury came at a perfect time to drop his ADP. Because if you guys look at past ACL injuries, most who are recovering generally suffer from some sort of
soft tissue.
Yes, compensation injury. And it's
right.
I mean, look at Dalvin Cook last year. As for the best example, but if you remember, he tore his ACL in the first preseason game, which is here in a week or so. So he should be quote unquote fully recovered from that. And this is just kind of par for the course. And I would expect that he may be eased in, like George says, but sooner rather than later, he's going to be the guy that gets the large volume of the carries there. And you will have gotten him at depressed prices this season because he had that hamstring injury, though it should not affect him because, like I said, he's coming up on that year anniversary of the injury. And usually it takes ACL tears about that long to get fully healthy. So I would expect him, even earlier in the season, to be the dominant ball carrier there.
I agree. So look for him. He could really be a value for you and a league winner.
All right, Stompy, we're going to come back to you for wide receivers. I'm dying to hear what zero wide receiver looks like.
This AJ Green injury was a relatively perfect for me because my wide receiver one is Tyler Boyd. I got him in the seventh. So I'm not celebrating the injury, but I'm not hating the injury.
Yep. Someone has a sports almanac from the future here.
Right.
I'm starting to see how, you won last year.
Listen,
I am.
Where we're going, we don't need roads. All right. Sorry. and then Curtis Samuel is my wide receiver two. The thing there is that he could, I mean, it'll be tough, but he could end up being the wide receiver one in Carolina this season. If not, you're still getting him at a lot lower prices than DJ Moore. And you could make an argument that they could have similar numbers.
I'm coming around on Curtis Samuel quite a bit, but I also like DJ Moore, and they're both going at kind of what I consider value. And people forget that 2 years ago, Thielen and Diggs were both going in like the seventh and the 10th round. No one was looking at them. So there inevitably are going to be these breakout guys in that 7 to 12 range that we just aren't considering. And somebody on that team is going to catch the ball. And I'm not worried about Cam. Cam is in my top eight QBs, and I think I had him at six.
Yeah, I think the problem for me with these guys, and listen, I like Samuel just because you're drafting him almost for free. You're not really paying much for him. So I like him where he's going. My problem with Cam is, name the last fantasy relevant wide receiver in Carolina.
Steve Smith.
Right. Devin Funchess. What are you talking about? Devin Funchess, I mean, was the top 24 back or wide receiver.
Wide receiver. Okay. So one guy since Steve Smith, how Kelvin long Benjamin. Is Steve Smith?
Kelvin Benjamin was a fantasy.
Was he top 24?
Yeah. He was shit.
His rookie year, he was pretty high.
There were two seasons that he had.
Yeah. I'm just saying like, I get what we're saying here. I just didn't see enough from Moore last year that makes me super excited about him. I don't think he's going to be a top 24 guy. If I had to pick one of the two, I really like Samuel. Like, but
I think you like Samuel more for the same reason I do. It's his ADP.
Right, exactly.
I've got this thing with Ron Rivera. I just don't like him as a coach. I think the offensive system that he runs is counterintuitive to the way the NFL is going. I think he'd much rather run the ball and do these short dump offs to Christian McCaffrey or Greg Olsen than to actually open up the offense. And for that reason alone, I fade the Carolina wide receivers.
I will say, and let me look this up here, but Samuel, when he got back after the injury, which I believe was week 4 or 5, he was a top 36 wide receiver. Let me look this up real quick. Sorry.
And to be fair to the rest of the league, he does get to play the Buccaneers twice.
Sorry. So he was from week 4 through 17. He was the wide receiver 34. And mind you, this is coming off of a gruesome injury in his rookie season where he likely may not have been completely healthy or completely back to normal last season until the middle of the season. So, I mean, if he's going to get more trust and he's already put up a wide receiver 3 numbers, wide receiver 2's within reach.
Yeah, my issue, though, is he's only had 4 games with more than 7 targets all last year.
You don't need more than 7 targets when you're efficient, George.
Is Cam Newton efficient?
No, he's not. He's not okay. A good passer. That's fine.
All right. So,
but I was going to say to go back though, he had 8 games with 4 or fewer targets. So he was not heavily involved. His numbers are kind of inflated by 2 games where he had 11 targets against Tampa and 13 targets at Atlanta. Other than that, I mean, he just wasn't that involved.
But we're also dealing with Cam that had a screwed up shoulder last year.
That is true. Again, I don't – it's not – my biggest issue is not necessarily the players. It's more the coach and his refusal to open up the offense.
Fair enough. So from there, I took Robbie Anderson as my wide receiver 3.
Love it.
He's obviously got a top 24 wide receiver season under his belt 2017. But last season, he finished the last 4 weeks of the season after Sam Darnold came back from his injury. Robbie Anderson was a wide receiver 6. Now, I don't think we can expect that from him and this Adam Gase offense, but wide receiver 2 numbers, I think, are very much in play here. And for him to go in the 10th round where I got him, that's pretty good value, return on value, especially as a wide receiver 35. And then this is one of my favorite picks of this draft because it's the earliest this player was taken, and it's Albert Wilson. I don't know if I can say I've been conducting that train, but I've been pretty close to the front of that train for the last 2 seasons. And Albert Wilson, before he went down, he was the wide receiver 27 through the first 7 weeks. And there's just so many things to point to him being successful this year. The new coaching regime, the Patriots, Chad O'Shea, having been the wide receiver coach for 10 years under Josh McDaniels, we know that they emphasize tight end and the slot receiver there with Edelman and Wes Welker. Danny Amendola's gone, so he should get a significant portion of his snaps in the slot. Nobody really there that's a go-to. And then the quarterbacks actually have thrown to, and mind you, Josh Rosen only has that one season, but he threw to the slot receiver 24% of the time. Ryan Fitzpatrick has the highest target percentage to slot receivers since 2009. So from 2009 to 2018, he targets the slot receiver 26% of the time. So that means likely a larger volume of targets for Albert Wilson. He's extremely efficient, has been his entire career in terms of breaking tackles, in terms of yards after a catch. And I'm just so high on this dude this year.
Okay, so I am going to say this. There's another quarterback who targets the slot nearly as much as that, and his name was Sam Bradford. And so I'm just worried that the Dolphins could be just as garbage as the Cardinals were last year, when I was really excited about Sam Bradford targeting the slot, and then that team just being complete garbage.
My Dolphins are definitely going to be garbage this year, but how dare you besmirch the name of the Miami Dolphins?
Here's the thing, and it's not like Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, yes, Larry Fitzgerald was not great last year, but he still had 734 yards, 6 touchdowns.
He's also being criminally underrated this year. People don't forget, he didn't miss games, but he was playing through a hamstring issue that hit him in the preseason for like the first 6 or 7 weeks. Like the guy, he was hobbled.
He also had Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen as his quarterbacks.
What do you know? Josh Rosen, what's the common denominator here?
I will say Mike McCoy, though, was an atrocious play caller last season, and that did Josh Rosen didn't help him whatsoever in terms of his development, and I don't know if we can apply that to the Miami Dolphins. And it looks like Fitzgerald is probably going to be the starter, at least for the first half of the season. So there are some differences. I'm not worried about it, because like I said, Albert Wilson has been one of the most efficient wide receivers in the game, especially the last two seasons, and he's going to get yards after catch. You just got to get him the ball.
Yeah. Yep. I think on that, when we're talking about Fitzpatrick, right? Fitzpatrick's going to be the starter for the first half.
Yeah. Yeah. What did I say?
Fitzgerald. We're talking about Cardinals and Dolphins there.
Yeah, damn it.
That's the worst. So the Dolphins, they'll be bottom three.
Oh yeah, they're going to be bad. We're tanking for Tua. if you don't mind, I'll jump over real quick. I'll run through my wide receivers. I actually like my wide receivers a lot more than I do my running backs. Typically, I am a running back hound, but I just took what was coming to me at the end of the draft. I've got Geronimo Allison, who I absolutely love. Deshaun Hamilton. I took Tyreek Hill in the fourth round. I just gambled thinking if he gets 4 games, that's 4 games, but then I get him the rest of the year, and it turns out he got none. So I feel that was a absolute steal in the fourth round. Alshon Jeffrey. I've got Julio Jones, who I took in the first round. With the bonus points, I feel Tyreek and Julio can probably hit the bonus almost every week. The 50 at least for sure, and possibly the 100 as well. So I love that dual threat. Marvin Jones, who I feel is severely underrated. He was doing phenomenal last year until he got injured. Coming back, should be healthy. I think he will be the wide receiver one in Detroit again this year, contrary to all the Kenny Galladay truthers. And then late round additions, I took Demaryius Thomas just to see what he could do in New England. And I also have Albert Wilson from Miami.
I like that. I think that sounds pretty good. So with mine, I kind of did I wanted to grab a couple of what I thought were elite wide receivers, especially for this format with the 5-point bonuses for yardage. I wanted to have guys that I thought could hit that. So I grabbed a couple of good wide receivers early and then pretty much punted until I found value late. I took Davante Adams at the end of the first and T.Y. Hilton at the end of the third. And then after that, I pretty much just went running backs and quarterbacks for the next six rounds and then was able to pick up Jarvis Landry and Marvin Jones on the 9-10 turn. I think that we're going to see a huge bounce back in efficiency from Landry. His depth of target was way higher than what it's been any other year that he's played. It's not where he was comfortable. He is more comfortable catching the short passes over the middle and then getting yak yards with them. So I expect him to go back to more of that kind of role and then have OBJ over the top, which is going to be huge for Landry. He had 150 targets last year. I expect him to drop to around the 115, 120 mark. And that's not a ton of targets, but coming from Baker and being in a high-powered offense, I think that's going to lead to a lot of production. With Marvin Jones, again, same as what you just said. It's a true 1A, 1B. I don't know which one is which in that offense, but they're both going to get a ton of work, and Marvin Jones there in the 10th round after he finishes the wide receiver 7 2 years ago is just crazy to me. Then after that, I waited again and took another pair of wide receivers late at the 15-16 turn. Zay Jones was still there, and he's been getting a lot of great reports coming out of the Buffalo camp. A lot of people are talking about John Brown, but it's really going to be Zay Jones. He's a freak athlete. He's going to be a beast. And then I got Josh Gordon also. If he were to happen to play, that you know he'll be an every week starter. And then real late, I grabbed Josh Doctson, which he hasn't come to fruition yet, but maybe something happens there.
All right. And I took the approach, my first four picks were not wide receivers. So in those middle rounds there, I ended up taking a handful. So my first wide receiver was Robert Woods. I think he's going to get yards. He's a steady wide receiver one there for me. Ended up with Mike Williams, Golden Tate, Alshon Jeffrey. I also got Marvin Jones, and then punted for a while and ended up with Deshaun Hamilton as well. And then at the very end of the draft, I took Jay Kumerow and Breshad Perriman just kind of as flyers.
I love Kumerow. I love Jay Kumerow personally.
I don't know how he sees the field.
I agree. I don't see it.
Well, so here's the thing. With injuries being what they are, and you never project injuries, but listen, I'm in the second to last round here. We're not picking from the best of the best. And I'm thinking, well, Aaron Rodgers talked up Allison last year. And Allison, before he got injured, went out and played well. And he's been talking up Kumerow a bit this year. And I'm going to take a flyer on a guy on a good offense. If he plays, awesome. If he's not, if he doesn't, he gets dropped. And I'll look to pick somebody else up. But we're in the second last round. I'm going to take a shot.
Fair enough. So one of the things I didn't bring up, I got Anthony Miller in the 14th round as a wide receiver 54.
That's amazing.
Wild. Cause I was like, is he not, he's the wide receiver 2 on an extremely good offense.
Yeah, it's going to be this. I think this is, we're going to see the Chicago Bears really come into fruition. And Mitchell Trubisky is a guy that I passed on for Philip Lindsay. And that was maybe my biggest regret. I don't know. I ended up with Rivers a couple rounds later. But Trubisky, I think, has a big year. And in this format, he's the guy who has a legitimate chance of hitting 50 yards rushing and 300 yards passing, or at least one or the other in every single game.
All right. So it sounds like most of us didn't grab one of the top tier tight ends. And I think we all are kind of in agreement where the bonus points, maybe or maybe not, like the bonus points don't really give you enough to maybe take one of those middle tier guys. So let's hear it, guys. Stompy, what did you end up with tight end?
So, this might sound like a homer pick, but I'm really on it.
Don't worry, it is.
my first tight end was Noah Fant in the 12th.
Reports haven't been great out of camp so far.
Yeah, I know. And he's always had hands issues, I suppose. He's an athletic freak in an offense that really doesn't have a dominant pass catcher. We know Joe Flacco likes to throw to tight ends, and I think he just he poses matchup problems for basically all teams. And I get it. Like, there's risk, especially with rookie tight ends. And it's not, I mean, he's been struggling except for in the red zone. Cause once he gets in the red zone, apparently he catches everything. But before those came out, Noah Fant was my tight end one or is my tight end one. I still feel okay about it. I think he will develop into I think he has a legitimate chance to be top 12 in his rookie season.
That would be, you know, that would be big if he's able to pull that off, because it's not something that people really tend to do. And this year, I actually think there's going to be a lot of tight ends that become productive and kind of quote unquote break out in the middle tiers. You know, they may not come into the top three, but I think there's several guys like as deep as like tight end 20 or even further that you could see some guys that many people don't even really know who they are that end up being productive assets at tight end. And so I was pretty happy to take some shots late.
Right. So I actually went with three rookies, and then second year I went young, apparently.
That's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Yeah, I hear you. I took Josh Oliver in the 15th, teaming up with Nick Foles, John DeFilippo, again, in an offense that doesn't really have a dominant pass catcher. We know Nick Foles, and yes, I mean, he had Zach Ertz, so maybe that's the reason that he was thrown to the tight end so often.
That's the secret sauce. Huh?
Right. Regardless, I took the shot there that he could develop early in that offense and be something at, this year as a rookie. In the 20th, I took Will Disley. I mean, he showed us flashes last season, I believe in the two games that he played. And in the 20th, it's kind of what I'm just going to take a swing here. And then in the 22nd, I took Trayvon Wesco, and with, Chris Herndon suspended for four games, Trayvon Wesco has a legitimate chance to steal that starting tight end, position in New York. I don't know if you guys subscribe to Matt Waldman at all, but he really likes Trayvon Wesco and what he has to offer, thinks he's better than Chris Herndon, and this gives him a legitimate shot to take those snaps and do something with them.
That's actually a name that I haven't spent a lot of time researching, so that'll give me something to look up a little bit more on.
Did you just call him a moron?
What's that?
Did you just call him a moron?
No, I didn't. I'm not sure exactly what I said now, but now I have to go back and listen to what I said, but I'm pretty sure I didn't say moron.
Don't worry about it. I'm cutting that part out. It's not a funny joke.
Oh, it was funny. I laughed.
It's not a funny joke, George.
George.
George. Come on, George.
Come on, George.
But I punted tight end also. I didn't think there was enough of a premium there, and so unless I had one of the guys drop to me that I really liked in the middle rounds, I wasn't going to do it, and I didn't. So I took Jimmy Graham in the back end of the 11th. I actually really like Jimmy this year. He was hitting 50 yards, you know, and this format matters, right? So we're talking about the bonuses. And four out of his eight games before he was wearing a cast on his hand, he hit the 50-yard bonus, and he only had two touchdowns all of last year, which I expect to come up to, you know, five. Is probably the over-under for me would be five touchdowns. And I do expect him and Aaron Rodgers. He's, you know, he's getting old, so there's things he can't do, but I think that he should have a fairly productive season. I took Jordan Reed at the end of the 14th on the off chance that he is actually healthy and the Jordan Reed that we remember. I took Matt Lacoste in the 17th round. He could very easily end up being the tight end that, that Brady throws to this year, and we know how Brady likes his tight end. I don't think Ben Watson is much of a factor or going to be much of a factor in the passing game. I think he's going to be more of a blocker, and Lacoste, he looks kind of good. And then for the same reason that you took Oliver, I took Swaim there. I think that he's more talented than Oliver, and I also think that Nick Foles, that's his comfort food, is right there at that tight end. So I'm really just hoping that one of these four is worthwhile enough to throw in, and I'm planning to load up heavy on running backs all season long. and ride them to SFB9.
So it sounds like I went the earliest on tight end. I debated taking Hunter Henry at 403. I instead took Tyreek Hill. And much to my shock, he was still there when it got back to me at 510. And at that point, I said, okay, I'm taking him. So I took Hunter Henry in the fifth. I didn't take my next tight end until the 14th round, where I took Jordan Reed. I figured if he's healthy, he's got potential to be a top five tight end. It just needs to be healthy. I think the quarterback situation is slowly improving there. And when you look at their wide receiving core, there's really not much there. So I think he is the best pass catching option in Washington right now. And then with my next to last pick, I went ahead and took Ben Watson. I figured in round 21, you know, why not take a New England tight end and see what – I know he's suspended four games, but why not just take him and see what happens?
That's right. Why not take Lacoste's backup?
For four games.
So I ended up with Kyle Rudolph. Hold your nose. I also ended up taking Greg Olsen, hoping he can return us a little bit of the form he got before. And then I took Ben Watson all the way down on the 20th as well, just to have a third tight end on my bench. So I think I did the anti-Stompy and I went as old as possible.
I was hoping you said you got Ian Thomas to back up Greg Olsen, because I don't know if Greg Olsen's foot is going to stay on his body for very much longer.
It was part of the plan, but I got sniped.
Ugh.
So that,
this draft, more than anything, I got so angry how many times I got sniped. I was just like, what is going on?
Same here. Did your guys' leagues have any big runs? Because, like, leading up, you heard, you know, you got to watch the runs. In my league, legit, we had no runs. Like, even people weren't even reaching for quarterbacks. Quarterbacks didn't start going until like round five, round six is when you started to see, you know, people starting to draft their first quarterbacks. There was no super runs at all where you'd see four or five players in a row go.
See, I was going to hit on this, and we didn't really have any big runs. We had a couple little runs throughout, and one of them was quarterback. So Pat Mahomes went at 1-8. We didn't have the next one till 2-11 when Watson was taken. Then Luck was taken at 3-11, and I took Rodgers at the 4-1. So after Luck and Rodgers, there was a big run for the rest of the fourth and fifth round. There was like 8, 9, 10 quarterbacks that went off. So that was the only run that happened, and I was happy to be on the front side of it and get Rodgers. And but Stompy, what about you? Did you have any big runs?
You and I built our teams very much alike, because I got Rodgers at 311.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. We have real similar, it sounds like.
And honestly, and I'll just say, in this format, when it's 6-point touchdown minus 4-point interception, and Rodgers has like, I think it's like 338 touchdowns to 80 interceptions over his career.
Yep.
And
he may be the number one.
And last year he was like 25-2 or something like that. It was just like, yep, one of those things where it's like, all right, I mean, I don't want to take a QB early here, but Rodgers falling to me in the back end of the third is just, it was like, it kind of forced my hand there.
Yep.
I think the run for mine was, middle round running backs. And I think it was because I just started taking like all the top end running backs so early.
Yeah.
And cause I was looking at guys like Royce Freeman that I really liked. And some of those pass catchers, Austin Eckler. And I just kept getting guys taken from me, and I was like, God damn it. Like, what is going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's unfortunately why I don't love my depth in terms of running back. But that was really the only run that it really hurt. I guess QB sort of went on a run. So I took Mitchell Trubisky in the back end of the fifth, and I was double sniped before that pick. So I've been a champion of Lamar Jackson this offseason.
Trubisky's going to finish higher than Jackson.
Yeah, we'll see. Just you relax. We'll see. But I was going to take him in the fifth because I was like, there's no way that like people are going to go earlier than me on Lamar Jackson. And so I'm sitting there and I also like Dak Prescott, and I think Dak Prescott can finish as a top five QB this season. Maybe not in this scoring, but in traditional PPR scoring. And so it was like Lamar, if I can't get one of Lamar, if I can't get Lamar Jackson, I'll take Dak Prescott. And they went back to back right before me. And I was like, oh my God, somebody's going to die.
I think, honestly, I think that they did you a favor. I have to be honest.
No, you stop it.
Tell me at the end of the season that I'm wrong. But like I said,
in this format, I love Lamar Jackson.
Yes. He's never going to throw for 300 yards. Yes, he's going to rush.
Yes, he will. You take that back.
It's not going to happen. It may
you
be
don't
one
put
game.
That evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
He's your number one best ball owned player, isn't he?
Probably yes. Like him or Albert Wilson, and those two are the guys like I'm willing to reach on.
Yeah. I do like the Wilson pick. The breaking the leg or whatever happened to him last season, I think has really hurt his value.
Yeah.
He would have been going a lot earlier. And I haven't seen a lot of videos of him running and how he's progressing, but I've heard he's coming along fairly well, right?
Well, he wasn't put on the – no, he was – was he put on the pup? He was not put on the pup. So that's nice.
Yeah, so that is promising.
So it all indications he should be ready for week one.
George, what quarterbacks did you end up with?
Well, what I did is I wanted to stack at least one of my quarterbacks and wide receivers. And if I was going to stack one, it was going to be Matt Ryan and Julio. So I reached a little bit for Matt Ryan, but I really wanted the stack in this format. So, and with the fact that they played 13 games in a dome was even more enticing for me. So I took Matt Ryan in the third round. I took Ben Roethlisberger, Sam Darnold, so I have three solid starting quarterbacks. And then in the 18th round, Daniel Jones from the Giants was just still on the board. And at that point, I said, fuck it. And I took him as well just to have a fourth, what I would presume as a starting quarterback by the end of the year.
Yeah, so you loaded up pretty heavy. I also like the stack idea. I had Adams with the 112, and then Rodgers was there at the 4-1. So I had to take that. Rivers fell to me at the 7-12, which as my second quarterback, I was pretty happy with. And I wasn't going to take a third quarterback, to be honest. I was just going to load up at all these other positions and maybe just play a running back during the bye weeks. And then when it got to the 18th round, 12th pick, and Joe Flacco was still on the board, I said, I'll go ahead and take a third quarterback.
So I played last year, and my starting quarterback was Ryan Tannehill. And when he got injured, I had to pay out the ass for Jay Cutler, and I blew basically all my entire fab budget on Jay Cutler. And I did not want to have to worry about my quarterback getting injured and then having to blow all my fab on a quarterback, because somebody's going to get a quarterback injury this year, and people are going to blow their entire fab budget on a quarterback, and I did not want to have to be that guy again. So that's the reason I loaded up with at least three starters. It wasn't necessarily I was concerned about bye weeks that I didn't care about, but I just wanted to preserve my fab for another position that came about other than a quarterback.
See, I understand that, but from the other mentality, I'm not going to give up one of my first 10 picks on a third quarterback when I could be getting a skill position player that I'm going to be starting every week. I've just kind of resigned myself that if I lose one of my first two quarterbacks, I'm not going to win the Scott Fish Bowl. So I have my two starting quarterbacks. Flacco was there for a third, great bye week fill in, but I couldn't bring myself to take especially with being at the very back end and having to wait 22 picks to get back to me. I just could not take a third quarterback that I would be using two times over a player that I'm going to use every single week that's going to boost my overall points.
Yeah, I get it. I took quarterbacks in 3, 7, and 9. So, yeah, I thought I took Arnold in round 10, but I took him at the back end of round 9.
So, yep.
I I ended up with Watson in the third round. I'm not usually an early quarterback guy. I really like the idea of Watson this year. He's got all, well, assuming they stay healthy, he's got his weapons back. The offensive line isn't great, so he'll probably scramble. He may get the 50-yard bonus occasionally, but he definitely can get that 300 yards per game bonus. And then I listened to Stompy a little bit. I must have channeled him. I ended up with Dak Prescott in the sixth. Yeah, so quarterbacks went really early in my league, and we're talking about runs, and it looks like 14 went off between round six and seven. Yeah, between round six and seven, 14 quarterbacks went off the board. So I knew I had to get my second guy pretty early. My league was just – there was just some odd moves that happened, but there was a run there, and I had to get the guy I really wanted. So I ended up with Watson and Prescott. And then way back at the back of the draft, I got Rosen from Miami, which is probably a wasted pick. It's probably the pick I hate the most. But, you know, I wanted a third quarterback just in case. And, you know, maybe he can make something of himself, but I kind of doubt it. That's the one pick I regret.
He'll be the starter by the end of the year because they're going to want to see what they got in him.
Yeah, but sometimes having the starter is just not worth it.
This is true.
So, all right. So we've kind of gone over all the positions here, and I just gave the player that I regret taking. So we'll go in reverse order from not the champ to the champ. George, go ahead. Who is your biggest regret?
So I actually like my team. I think it's a solid all around team. If I would have done anything different, I think I might have taken another wide receiver instead of taking the tight end, instead of Hunter Henry in the fifth. I think I would have taken another running back. Looking to see who came after I drafted Hunter Henry, there was Mark Ingram, Kenyon Drake, Philip Lindsay, Chris Carson, James White, Tevin Coleman. So there was still some good value left on the board at that point. So I think I would like my team a little bit better had I taken one more running back, which is typically how I draft anyway, is heavy with the running backs. So I think I'd be fine with Jordan Reed as my starting tight end and any of the Mark Ingrams, Chris Carsons, Philip Lindsay's, any of them on my team, and not having Hunter Henry.
Lucas, biggest regret?
Sorry. I don't really have any regrets. The biggest decision that I made was on the 5-6 turn. I took Carson and Philip Lindsay. I really believe Trubisky's going to have a big year in this format, so I was debating taking Trubisky there where I took Philip Lindsay, and I didn't know if any of the running backs I liked were going to be there at the 7-8 turn. At the 7-8 turn, James White was there, which is another guy I would have been targeting. So if you could have told me James White would have been there as my third running back, I probably would have went the other way. But Phillip Rivers was also there at the 7-8 turn, so I'm pretty happy with how that turned out.
Stompy?
I took Andy Dalton in the 8th as my third QB. Now that I look at my running back depth, much like George, I wish I would have gotten another running back there, whether that be somebody like Royce Freeman, Austin Eckler, somebody in there, just to make me feel better about that depth. But I will say, even post AJ Green news, I do think that Andy Dalton is in for a big season under a new coach.
All right, and...
Yeah. So, and that's the other thing. I have the Dalton Boyd stack, and then I have the Trubisky Anthony Miller stack. So I didn't know I did that, but apparently I stacked two quarterbacks.
So any major surprises in your draft? A pick that made you scratch your head, Stompy?
Ugh. I mean, I would have to look back at my draft. I don't know. Really, the one that surprised me the most was Lamar Jackson going where he did.
You thought you were way early on him and ended up missing out.
Yeah. Like him going in the fifth, I was like, wow. All right. And that was the other thing. I just surprised that QBs went as early as they did in my draft.
Well, and to make you feel a little better, he went in the fifth in my draft too. So, biggest surprise in my draft is the tight end 5 off the board went in round 3, and it was Cook from New Orleans. So he went ahead of O.J. Howard. He went ahead of, you know, Vance McDonald or Njoku, which is fine. But like him in the 3rd round, he went before Ingram. So that was kind of crazy to me. At that point, I knew I wasn't going to get a high-end tight end because I wasn't willing to pay that much for one.
Yeah, mine, there weren't really any major surprises to me. I think Kittle's going to be a bust. He went at the 2-3, and I just don't think he's going to have a huge year this year. Mahomes went at the 1-8, and I was kind of surprised. Honestly, I was kind of surprised that some of the QBs didn't start going earlier, just with it being a super flex. I thought some of these QBs would go earlier.
Yeah, I had the same thing. There was really no surprises, no shocks. Through the first 4 rounds, we only had 9 quarterbacks. Through the first 5 rounds, we had 12 quarterbacks. So there wasn't a whole lot of people reaching for quarterbacks, which really didn't depress any of the value in any of the other positions. We had Mahomes was the only one to go in the 1st round. Bob Harris took Andrew Luck in the 2nd. Those were the only 2 quarterbacks through the first 2 rounds. The 3 tight ends were – the top 3 tight ends were gone by the end of the 2nd. It's just typically what you would see in a super flex draft with people who know what they're doing. We had a good amount of fans in here, but these guys were pretty intuitive fans. They knew what they were doing.
So last question on the Scott Fishbowl. We're going to get out of here. Was there one guy around where you drafted that kept taking every player you wanted?
Yes, there was 2 of them. One on each side of me.
I was getting sniped all over the goddamn place by everybody in that. I was so – this draft is the angriest I've been drafting in a long time. Like, this was just – I was getting sniped right and left. And it wasn't just one person. It was multiple people around me. And it was
– mine was the guys – so it wasn't so much the guy that drafted in the 9 position. Like, he might have sniped me once or twice, but, you know, that's whatever. You know, 22 rounds, you get sniped once or twice, whatever. But the 2 guys that were drafting at the 11 spot and the 12 spot, Jeremy Spolarich and Chris Moxley, you guys, okay? Both of you. You motherfuckers were sniping me almost every single fucking round. It was ridiculous. There was somebody I would want, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this person, and hopefully one of these 3 fall to my next pick. Yeah, no, they were gone before they would get back to me in 4 picks. You sons of bitches.
Not going to go on any podcasts in the off season until Scott Fishbowl.
That's right. That's right. I'm not putting out any articles. I'm not doing anything until Scott Fishbowl, and then I'll just go balls to the wall.
So yeah, screw all of you. I'm not talking anymore.
So my biggest issue was the guy who drafted. So I drafted 2. The guy that drafted 1, he picked Ezekiel Elliott 1st, and I got Christian McCaffrey and Connor, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna grab one of these nice wide receivers that are still available. And he went wide receiver. So he went Brown and Evans. And I thought, okay, when we got back to the next set of picks, I'm thinking to myself, all right, he just went wide receiver. I'm going to go ahead and take Kerryon Johnson here, and I'll be happy because I believe either Cooks or Hill's going to fall to me because he just went wide receiver. And wouldn't you know it, he went Cooks and Hill. And I was like, okay, I got Kerryon Johnson now. I'm going to take Robert Woods. We'll keep rolling. And I ended up taking Dak Prescott thinking, all right, Cooper Kupp will probably make it back to me. This guy has just taken 4 wide receivers. I'm like, he can't do it again. Of course, Cooper Kupp and Robinson yet again. And I'm like, come on, man, pick something else. But no, he just over and over and over again, I'm thinking, all right, my guy's going to fall to me. It's going to be great. And
Jason, channel your inner George. Curse him out. Get it off your chest. You'll feel so much better afterwards. You got to drop the name.
George, we are a fantasy. We are a family podcast. I'm going to have to do a lot of editing on that curse.
No, it's you let that rant go.
It has never happened. Anyway, so Timothy Talmadge with RotoViz. Man, pick somebody besides a wide receiver every once in a while, all right? Save some of them for the rest of us. So that is I'm not going to cuss. It's a family show, George.
It is not, absolutely George. Not.
All right. So that's going to close us out for this week. I'd like to thank our guest, Stompy. Stompy, do you, besides your at FF Stompy on Twitter, is there anything you want to promote? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah. You might as well sit down for 10 minutes and let me talk.
I've been sitting for an hour and a half. 10 more minutes is fine.
So you can follow one of my podcasts, The Dynasty Diagnostic, on Twitter at DYNO Diagnostic. Find us on the Dynasty Trade Calculator feed. Leave us a rate and review if you would. You can also find me or follow my co-host as well, Eitan Mosia. That's E-T-A-N Mosia. You can follow my other podcast, Superflex Super Show, at Superflex Show on Twitter. Follow my guests or my co-hosts, John Hoag at Superflex Dude and James Catullus at _ James the Brain. And then find them on the DLF family of podcasts. And then finally, I write for FF Statistics. We have a Patreon now. You get access to free articles, but, if you would donate to the Patreon, you get access to all the data that we use, to help us better ourselves, help us in our writing, and it'll help you with your leagues. Go to ffstatistics.com, follow FF Statistics at ffstatistics _.
And just a real quick, if you're not following the people that Stompy just mentioned, you're missing out. Other than Stompy, those other guys are some of the brightest guys in the business, and you will absolutely learn something from following them.
George just likes to throw shade around like crazy.
Listen, dude, listen. I've seen your crotch zoomed in, okay? I've got to throw some shade. I'm doing the community a favor by throwing some shade.
All right, well, listen, if you're not tired from hitting the follow button after all of that, you can follow the Sleeper Wire Show at Sleeper Wire Show. You can follow Lucas at Sleeper Wire LBB. You can follow George at BFTG Pod, and you can find me at FL Dr. Milbarge. Guys, it's been a blast. Good luck in the Scott Fishbowl coming in second, and we'll see you next time.
You guys, okay? Both of you.